The holidays are happening at Diamonds Direct. Still rushing to finish your holiday shopping? Don't worry, we've got you covered. Now through Sunday, it's our last chance sale with 20% off virtually everything. Earrings, bracelets, pendants, and more. Plus special financing options up to 5 years. But don't wait. This is your final opportunity to find the perfect gift at the best value before the holidays. Plus special designer appearances. Visit us during extended holiday hours or shop online and pick up in store. Our 20% off last chance sale ends Sunday. Learn more at DiamondsDirect.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
Let's attack The Stack. I'm Justin.
What's up, Uppy?
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come this week, and we attack them. We rip them to shreds. Ready to get attacked, Stack. Here's our first
murder.
There you go. Ultimate Universe, 1 year in, number one for Marvel, written by Dennis Capp and Chris Condon, art by Jonah Scharf and Alessandro Capuccio. Per the title, the Ultimate Universe, just in case you didn't know, takes place in real time, and here we are checking in kind of with the status quo of a bunch of the different titles, but we're also turning it to the bad guys, the Makers Council, the Maker being the evil Reed Richards. And we're taking the POV of Ultimate Nick Fury, who has been forced to do terrible things his entire life, working for the Maker and the Council. A lot of hype on this book, a lot of hype on the Ultimate Universe. What did you think about this issue that also includes a preview of Ultimate Wolverine?
I love this issue. This is one of my favorites of the week. Yes. I think Dennis Capp, he just brings so many ideas to the table. Like this book starts with a lot of ideas. It starts in a dark place. It's a darker universe, as we know from reading all the other Ultimate titles, but still rooted in so many Marvel Universe ideas. And then just the ending lands it. Like it gets darker. It gets more upsetting. It flips the script yet again. The art is fantastic. I think the way this moves and really pushes out the borders of the Ultimate Universe is making me enjoy this whole experiment so much.
Huh. Pete?
Well, a little bit of the opposite for me. I felt like, and spoilers, but when I saw the Fury room, I was just like, oh, man, that looks like I've been to a couple of dudes' places where it's just, prepackaged, action figures on the wall and stuff like that. So a collector, if you will. So it was just kind of weird where it's like, hey, if you burn out one Fury, just open another Fury and it'll be a fresh Fury. It'll have that, fresh scent of that
new
Fury
smell. But wait, why
didn't
you like that? I thought that was such an interesting idea to sort of redeem the Ultimate Nick Fury as a character. Why didn't you like that?
I don't know. It's a weird move where it's like, I'm just going to reach over and open another Fury if this Fury starts acting up.
Not to focus on this one aspect of the issue too much, but that's pretty much baked into the Marvel Universe with the LMDs. It's
LMD,
the same thing that's been happening
LMD
for
guy.
Decades at this point. So
it's
Doom. There's a historical precedent there. I'm surprised the thing that you didn't like about it, Pete, because this is the thing that I do think worked about it, but I felt viscerally uncomfortable reading the book, watching these heroes who have become the worst villains in the world. And that's how you're supposed to feel. But
yes,
watching like Magic and Colossus sitting there talking about killing everybody.
Oh, yeah, that was rough.
You know, we've already seen the Hulk do it in an earlier issue here. It's upsetting to see these things because we know they're the way they're supposed to be. We also get multiple montages of the heroes and events of the Marvel Universe getting taken down by Nick Fury. Similarly, very upsetting. So like you're saying, very dark world, Justin. But what it does is it bigs up our heroes because it gives them these terrible villains to really take down. And that's a great place for comics to be.
Well, and I think it sort of subverts the original idea of the Ultimate Universe. It was like, yo, look how cool these heroes are. And they do cool things, and they're quippier and whatever. Not, trapped by all this other continuity. It flips it to like, hey, look, all these heroes that are sort of comfortable in the main Marvel Universe, they're actually not doing well. They are losing constantly, and the the cards are stacked against them. And that's super exciting to me.
What did you think about Ultimate Wolverine, though? We get a little taster of that at the end here. Pete, what do you think?
I'm cautiously excited. We'll see.
Wait, why? Because, I mean, here's the different take is it's like a Wolverine that never left the Weapon X program, but very much underneath Colossus as sort of the head of the program, I guess you could say.
And here's my question. Is it Wolverine? Because they call him Logan, but you don't see his face at any point in this book. I have a sense that there's going to be a twist there. I guess we'll see in the main book itself, but I'm intrigued.
Said it's Sabretooth? Who else could it be?
Sabretooth.
Omega Red we've already established in this world, which would make a little bit of sense given
that Maverick? Maybe Maverick?
Why? Why do that? Why be like, hey guys, surprise, it was Maverick. It's like, okay, a Wolverine knockoff?
Where's his M mask? I love his M mask.
I like how he has guns a lot.
I know several things about him. Chris Condon, Alessandro Capuccio, great team. Why don't we move on and talk about another great team, though? Batman Dark Patterns, number one from DC Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Hayden Sherman. Now, the concept here, this is...
Great cover.
It is a great cover. This is a bunch, Justin, of four...
It's you
three,
putting on your Batman
issue,
t-shirt.
Three, four issues stories all taking place back in the day with Batman. And my assumption when I heard that concept is like, oh, it's going to be like kitschy fun back in the day. Nope. This is seven, but with Batman is essentially what we're getting here.
Whoa.
It's pretty messed up. And the thing that I think is most impressive about this is Hayden Sherman is also drawing absolute Wonder Woman. And his style is so different on these two books. It's great.
Yeah. What I really loved about this was we're the reveal of the villain and Batman's kind of like the way he's going through all these different options and he's completely thrown. He doesn't know what to do with him. You know, he doesn't want to kill this person. I was really blown away by the setup and the execution. It's very cool, and I just felt like this was such a creepy, amazing kind of art and story mesh in this kind of unique way. I was impressed.
You know what this reminded me of? Do you guys have a guess?
Batman the Animated Series.
No, God, I'm not an idiot. Why would you ever say that? Huh. This reminded me of
Mind
the original.
Hunter.
This a little bit, but it reminded me, I think your reference is great, Alex, Seven, but it reminded me a little bit of the vibe of the original Batman movie. It feels like it's a...
Oh, because of the symbol in the middle there?
Is no, not even. Good? It oh, just feels really? Like... It feels like that's the type of Batman that we're getting. Someone who is, you know, he has his Alfred support system, but he's otherwise like a loner, a little bit of a weirdo, someone who is like philosophizing, but also like just driving around his cool car. Yes, this reminds me of a Michael Keaton Batman. If you like that, this is great. And to shout out the Hayden Sherman art, the perspectives on... It's like if the comic panels are a camera, it took the usual sort of profile wide shot of the city and just tilted the camera up, and we're always looking down in these steep, sort of terrifying angles that we're like standing on the edge of a building looking down. It just adds so much more tension. It's such a simple... choice, but it makes a dramatic change to this Batman story. Really enjoyed this.
From the world of Minor Threats, The Brood, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Heath Corson, Patton Oswalt, and Jordan Bloom, art by I.N.J. Culbert. This is sort of a King Lear, but with supervillains, where one of them, the father, is dying, and he needs to leave his criminal empire to one of his kids. One of them has magic powers, one of them has science powers, one of them wants nothing to do with it at whatsoever. We'll see which one ends up with the empire, I guess. We've generally enjoyed all of the Minor Threats things so far. What do you guys think about this one?
I really enjoyed this as well, but I will update your reference a little bit and say this is Succession for superhero.
Yeah, but Succession is King Lear.
Yeah, I know, but like, I got news for you, Alex. I'm just going to update you of the 400 years. Yeah, is that cool?
Just trying to,
if I bring you 400 years,
well, I'm going to make another reference because the thing that bothered me the most about this book is the main character, who's a super smart villain, looked too much like one of the villains from the Despicable Me movies for me to get it.
Oh, my God. Come on.
The guy with the bowl cut? The guy with the bowl cut looks like him.
Oh, my God. That's okay. Weird.
And my issue is, I'm reading this book, I see the villain from the Despicable Me movies. Where are the minions? Where's somebody wanting da-na-na? That's my question. I didn't see that anywhere in the book. Minor Threats team, give us our da-na-na.
Are you a paid minion marketer? The amount of times you use the word da-na-na, a word I've never said out loud outside of this podcast. just to be clear. And here I am saying it again.
I thought this was such a cool setup, very well executed. Unfortunately, I had to live a similar experience where my father was hoping I was going to take over the family business, and I had to tell him to go rub rock salt.
Real couple questions there. Rub rock salt, not a phrase anyone's heard out loud before. What does that mean? Question number one. Question number two, what's the family business? Is it eating cheesesteaks or making garbage plates?
Yeah, it's making garbage plates. Yeah, I felt like this was such a interesting premise for a villain to have to deal with. You know what
you
I mean?
Introduced the idea that you did take over the family business. You must name said business.
Yeah, what was it?
I have to.
Yes, what was it?
Yeah, my dad had an insurance business that he wanted his sons to take over.
And did your brother take over?
Nope.
Yeah, and sorry, this was some sort of insurance scam business, is what you're saying?
Yeah, nope. Pyramid scheme. Interesting.
Yeah.
And so, rub rock salt?
Yeah, tell us about rub rock salt.
That's just a phrase. It's the,
no, it's not.
No, I don't think so. And if anyone in the comments has ever heard or said the phrase rub rock salt, please
Google
write that down.
It's a common saying, yeah.
Google rub rock salt. I think that sounds like a spa treatment that people are having in a bad spa. At a spa that makes you unhappy when you leave.
Anyway, I thought this was a fun premise for a super villain to have to deal with. I thought it really kind of grounded everything that was happening. I love the art. I thought this was just a ton of fun and a great use of kind of like supervillains in an everyday kind of scenario.
It was nice. Like where I think Alex and I are sort of saying the same thing, just in different time periods. But like the characters are well explored in the Succession King Lear breakdown here. And I am curious to hear how it's going to go forward.
Yeah. I love you more than rock salt. Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, number one from Marvel, written by Christos Gage, art by Eric Gopster. This is tying into the upcoming Disney Plus animated series. It's a prequel, but it takes place after or during the first episode. Not entirely clear. Regardless, we are getting a new Peter Parker going on an adventure with Nico Minoru, who is going to be a major character in the TV show. It's a different universe. It's not the MCU. It's somewhere else. I generally enjoyed this, and I like the art. But the thing that was holding me up a little bit is the fact that we haven't seen the show, and there are so many things that are like, see the show for the explanation of this thing. I'd like to. I think I will like this more once I've watched the first episode. But right now, that's kind of important.
I agree completely. It felt strange to be like, why is this out right now? Like, because, you know, Christos Gage is an amazing, like bring writer. Him in. He's someone who can just, like, write anything. And this is really fun. I like the way that this story sort of is a Spider-Man origin, but doesn't, like, make it a whole thing. It's sort of like, does it, sticks and moves into a larger story. Which was good, but what do you? Why is Nico everywhere? What is Nico is just transcending?
Nico is so huge right now, bro.
I mean, Nico's also in the Ultimate X-Men book, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. She's a fun character. She's got a cool staff.
People love the Nico. You know what I mean? The Nico wafers, delicious candy.
Interesting. That's not the same.
Nobody likes those.
And also nobody likes. I would say aggressively on, chalky, no one likes those.
Nothing like a chalky candy. You know what I mean? Come on.
That's
man.
Like being like, hey.
A picture of you between the rock salt and this thing, and I don't like it.
Oh, honestly, you seem like a time traveler from over 100 years ago. Where you're like, oh, you like candy? Necco wafers. Like, no. Necco wafers is like, I would rather eat just aspirin, regular
what?
Aspirin.
That was they make aspirin gum. That's clearly better than
Necco wafers aspirin. Was back before they knew what candy was, where some guy was like, sure, this is candy.
Do you remember
like,
aspirin?
This is not. This is wood. You are
the only candy
wood.
Before Necco wafers was rock salt. And they finally progressed. They were rubbing rock salt, like you said. And I looked it up. Not hidden on Google, my guy. Not hidden on Google.
No, a rare sure zero results.
Yeah, they were like, so on, even dude. The AI was like, not interested.
Nah, dude.
AI. Help me out.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing. The animated movies really hit the Spider-Man origin story joke hard, okay? And so when you get another origin story by Spider-Man here, I'm like, we got to be doing different things than just having Nico and mob bosses be the villain here.
That is different, yeah. I think, from the Spider-Man origin. It's very different.
It's sure it's different, but
this isn't like a spoiler because they've already talked about this, I think. But the way that he gets his powers is Venom and Doctor Strange are fighting through the multiverse, drop a spider off that bites him, and
randomly.
That's how he becomes Spider-Man. Probably there's more to it, but we haven't seen the series or anything like that. The thing that I was also trying to wrap my head around, not to spend too much time on this one, but back in the day, we used to get full adaptations in book form of movies that would come out like a month beforehand, and that was fine. Like, you would just read that and be like, cool, and then I see the movie. So I was worried that my modern spoiler-verse brain just wasn't accepting that anymore. But I think the thing is that, like, this is too dependent on the show because it's threading the needle of the show, but we don't know what that needle is yet, is the issue.
Well, and I would go a little further and say, like, this is an extension of the show. This mm-hmm. comic is a, like, oh, did you see the show? This comic is cool and in that same universe. As a preview for the show, it's very strange to me to be, like, another Spider-Man book that's different, but we don't know why or how.
Yeah. All right.
Also, Googled it. And it comes right up, dude. You're a fucking lying, dude.
No, you're not.
I looked it. It says to take and rub rock salt. That's not what you said, and that's a strange idea.
No, it said go rub rock salt, which they say is a popular phrase like telling someone to go fly a kite.
And just to be clear, when Pete says he Googled it, there is back in the day, there was a wise man called the Googler, and you would go and ask him questions and he would respond to you. So that's who you're talking to, just off camera, right?
Yep. The Googler.
Yeah, I Googled it. I texted my cousin who says it to like I do.
Yep.
Superwoman special number one from DC Comics written by Joshua Williamson.
Hey, Justin liked this one.
Art by Laura Braga, Nicolas Ismeja, and Edwin Galmon. We are picking up some threads that Joshua Williamson has been laying down on the main Superman title, where Lois Lane now has Superman powers. Here we mostly find out how and why and how she deals with it, as well as getting a tease for a bunch of stuff coming up. Justin, since you did like this one, like this one?
I did like this. I think... What's good about this, I mean, I mentioned this on the live show, but there's a sort of strange trend where a lot of partners of superheroes are suddenly also superheroes. Mm-hmm. From your Spider-Man, you've got your Hal Jordan, Carol being superpowered. Like, that's happening a lot. And so it feels like a trend. But I think this issue does a great job of defining how and why that happened. And the spoiler at the end of the issue, which pays off a sort of underused idea from Absolute Power, where people's powers were, some characters were depowered, like Barry Allen, powers shifted in different ways, uses that in a way that actually feels like a worthwhile storytelling device that I haven't seen yet as a spinoff of Absolute Power. Great tease at the end. It gives actual stakes and meaning to having Lois Lane be superpowered. Great stuff.
Wow.
Pete?
It's kind of the opposite of how I feel, but I really did love the ending. I also really love the art. The thing about a trend is, like, there's good things about trends, and then there's, you know, I mean, eventually you're going to write a comic book for years and years and years. They're going to play around with stuff, and eventually someone's going to be like, let's give Lois superpowers. Let's see what happens. But
That was Joshua Williamson, right? That was like a perfect impersonation.
I don't know.
Or was that Ma Fratelli from The Goonies? So I just trying to differentiate.
Yeah, there we go.
Is she still editing this book?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. My kids are killers.
But one of the things I like about Lois, and it could just be me, and that's totally fine, but is the fact that she is such a powerful person on her own. You know what I mean? Like, she does so much, and it has been used to say and do a lot of amazing, beautiful things. So,
from a writing and editorial perspective at the Daily Planet, you're saying.
Right, but also being a human being who has to juggle having a partner who has a lot of issues and is very high maintenance and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I think there's a lot to like about her. Giving her powers is new, so that's always exciting. But I'd like to see, you know, her discovering writing and her voice is interesting, I guess, as a super. But I almost would rather see her discovering her writing voice, you know, not as someone with a superpower, you know.
So can I just back up what you're saying? Because I agree with you. I think the power creep of taking normal characters and giving them superpowers is something you see on every single supernatural or science fiction show. Like, take a look at literally all of them. There's always one person who's like, I'm a unique, special, superpowered person. And by the end of 7 seasons, they're all like, pew, 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 pew. We all have
superpowers. We're a family with lasers.
Yeah, exactly. And it drives me a little nuts because, to your point, normal people can have a role to play. And Lois Lane has been as powerful as Superman in different aspects throughout the universe. The thing that I liked about this is the thing that you touched on the end there, which this is Lois Lane grappling with that in this book in a very meta way. The idea of this special is her being like, I was a normal human. Can I enjoy flying? I was telling the story. Now I am the story. What does that make me now?
Exactly.
And I thought that was just a very smart idea to play with. How it plays out through the rest of the books, whatever. But in terms of this one issue, it worked for me.
And I think it justified it really well. But I just want to highlight really quickly, definitely the future of pull quote on a Superman issue. Superman, high maintenance. Nothing more true about Superman than he's just a pain in the ace.
I didn't say that.
High maintenance. Well,
the holidays are happening at Diamonds Direct. Still rushing to finish your holiday shopping? Don't worry, we've got you covered. Now through Sunday, it's our last chance sale with 20% off virtually everything. Earrings, bracelets, pendants, and more. Plus special financing options up to 5 years. But don't wait. This is your final opportunity to find the perfect gift at the best value before the holidays. Plus special designer appearances. Visit us during extended holiday hours or shop online and pick up in store. Our 20% off last chance sale ends Sunday. Learn more at DiamondsDirect.com.
Let's move on. Talk about In Bloom, number one from Boom Studios.
Creepy ass cover.
More like In Boom, am I right? Written by, or Bloom Studios, I don't know, whichever way you want to go. Written by Michael W. Conrad, art by John J. Pearson. This is a new sci-fi book taking place in a world where plants talk back. They sass people and tell them, hey man, you're killing the planet, we're going to take over. And you know what? A lot of people really love it. However, as you may expect, it is not quite as on the board as you might think it is, and there's some mysteries to investigate. We're following a cop who has his own reservations about what's called the bloom. I was pretty intrigued by this, not just because Michael W. Conrad, who we really, really like, was writing it, but also the covers and art looked really creepy and weird. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's even creepier and weirder inside the book.
That's the nice thing about a cover like this. It really sets a tone and lets you know what you're getting into. Yeah, I thought this was really some crazy, impressive storytelling. I love this. It's fucked up. Especially, you know, spoilers, the whole killing grandma's part was really kind of hit me in the nuts. But I felt like there was a lot going on, but a really impressive first issue.
You hate to see a good grandma go down, right?
Yeah, you do.
Just eliminating some from the dating pool, you're saying.
No, that's not. Wow. You
that
really jumped
felt
into
like
some...
that's what you were saying.
Nope. That's not what I was saying at all, man.
Just trying to read the tea leaves. That felt pretty accurate to me.
Everybody in, water's fine, I always say. In the grandma dating pool.
Yes,
oh,
exactly.
Oh, my God. Way to make it creepy, dude.
No, you did it when you said it originally, Pete. That's your whole thing.
Yeah. What, dude? They're killing old people. You don't think that's fucked up?
No, I think...
You're cool with it?
I mean, they're giving their bodies back to the plants.
I love how Golden Girls ended. I can't wait to bloom. I love how Golden Girls ended and when they killed them all one by one. I was like,
I didn't like that. They did it in real life. That's the crazy part because they were done with the show. Oh, and they were already at that point, like mid-50s, which is basically dead.
Oh, don't make me. Come on, dude. That's not cool.
Just
dude.
Like the grandma in this story, she was like, I'm ready to go. Estelle Getty was like, I've done enough.
Grandma in the story was not ready to go.
She had her regrets after she went. But let me say, talking about In Bloom, Michael W. Conrad, big swinger. Like from a writing perspective, always going very hard. And this book does the same. I enjoyed it. There are multiple competing mysteries happening at the same time in a very aggressive way, which is a fun way to start a series.
Yeah, a lot of tension.
Yeah. Laura Kinney, The Wolverine, number one from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Giada Belviso. This book, per the title, is focusing on Laura's solo adventure spinning out of the pages of NYX. We get a little bit of at the beginning here, but most of this issue takes her to Dubai, I want to say, where she tries to track down a missing mutant while there. And I'll tell you what. Nobody in the business is writing sharp, complicated women like Erica Schultz, and I mean that sincerely.
Nice, yeah. I mean, Erica Schultz is killing the game right now. She's doing a lot of great work, and this is another example of this. This was such a great issue. Love the art. Love the story. X-23 is such a badass. And I love the kind of like splash page, double page spread of her warp. Whooping ass, working her way up to different floors here. This was just really absolutely fantastic from start to finish. And I love the kind of boss battle we got, plus cool teaser for next issue. I'm very excited about this run. This is great.
Agree. I really love the teaser for the next issue, which touches on a storyline from another book that Erica Schultz wrote earlier this year, focusing on Daredevil. The Electro Daredevil, which is really exciting, that connected with Laura's history. But Erica Schultz is great, like you're saying, Alex, at writing female characters. This one tips a little too hard into the plot and premise setup. I felt like I just want to ride with Laura a little bit more. Like she's such a character that in her longer run from a few years ago had so much great backstory. And it feels like this issue is just like, she's just all go, no stop. And I want to take a second and get to know this Laura now, because I think there's a lot to define here. I do trust Erica Schultz to pull it off going forward into the next issue.
I hear what you're saying. This reminded me a little bit, and partially this was the setting where we get her like fighting her way up that tall tower in Dubai. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of Fast and the Furious, but...
Laura, the 1954 is... movie?
Yes, of course. No, it was like, it's her all go. Like, she is the car in this case. She's fighting her way through. She's just pummeling through everything. And it's fun. It also brings back a villain from way back in the day, I think from like the Claremont run, which was fun to see that. Justin, but like, this is high octane action.
She's the car. Everyone's favorite character.
Yeah, because that's in that Fast and Furious,
she's the
car. In the Fast and Furious movie, they just drive the car off of a tall building. So there's a tall building.
Okay, same building. The Burj Khalifa.
Same building.
Okay, so yeah, that's
building's been through a lot, man.
But she's the car.
That building could talk.
She's like a Herbie the Love Bug.
There we go.
Is what Alex is saying.
Oh, okay. That's a nice current reference. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, Mr. King Lear. Oh, now someone's got
something
to say.
That's all I'm saying. Like, throw the first stone or rub the rock salt.
That's a movie from the early aughts, Alex, which is literally 400 years.
Okay, put a little rock salt on it.
I don't think you're using that correctly. I don't think you're using that correctly.
That's a spicy meatball. Black Lightning, number two from DC Comics, written by Brandon Thompson. Art by Fico Osseo. The new status quo of Black Lightning is he's the guy who reclaims people with wild powers from absolute power for the Justice League and tries to help them get a handle on it. One of those people is his own daughter, which is where we're picking up with in this issue. I really love the first issue a lot. I think you guys also liked it, but maybe we're not quite over the moon. But what did you think about this second one?
Yeah, this is great. I really love the... first off, fun last panel, solid-ish, good start. I just love the story and the action, love the art style. And also I liked how, like, with Steel's powers, it's almost like Iron Man, where it just kind of like all kind of came and joined on her. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that I would argue the second to last page panel is the dope one with her, the armor like you're describing, gathering around her. It was just a great piece, I thought.
Yeah, pretty badass.
Go ahead, Justin.
Well, I was just going to say this feels like this spins out of absolute power in a nice way, in that it feels like power is what this is about. We have two daughters, one whose powers are used for, she's welcomed into the crime-fighting family, and another daughter who is being sort of very controlled. It feels like this is maybe the spiritual successor to some of the themes that crossover was all about.
Yeah, I wasn't quite as high on this issue as I was on the last one. It felt like there was a lot of things going on where the last one was more focused. But Fico Osseo is drawing some killer action scenes. There's a two-page splash of them fighting like a dragon type creature that was really cool. And as you guys mentioned,
it's a T-Rex.
T-Rex, there you go. And it's the like stuff dragon, with Natasha Irons at the end was pretty great too. Shiver Suspensteries, number one from Odie Press, written by Hunter Goranson, Jason Aaron, Ben H. Winters, Jay Stevens, George Nauthey, and Johnny Craig. Art by Valeria Berzo Kano, Peter Krause, David Lapham, Caitlin Yarsky, and Johnny Craig. This is yet another holiday anthology, this time a spooky, scary one. Pete, I know you didn't like it because it was too scary, but Justin, what did you think?
Just scary enough.
It's true. Am I wrong,
Pete? Well, I mean, it was, I thought it was still fun. I mean, the scary cover really gave you a nice understanding of what you're getting into, but it's a collection of messed up stories, great art, and great collection. I mean, I couldn't enjoy a lot of them, but they were still great.
You were too scared to get out your Christmas decorations, I heard. You, like, left them in the box.
Well, yeah, after reading this, can you blame me?
Yeah, put them right back. I actually really did enjoy this. I thought the second story, which used a time travel metaphor to hit on the Christmas Carol, I thought was, like, so smart, a take on that story that I can't believe I haven't seen before, where someone visits themselves using a time travel machine to show them their misdeeds. I thought was very smart. But across the board, a really good use of bringing us horror into the holiday season through the holiday season, as opposed to, I think so many of these anthologies are like, I'm going to show you something fucked up, and it's at Christmas. All of these, I felt like, were like, here's the holidays, and here's something that is a horrifying angle on it. So it's just a very smartly spun out anthology.
I really like this as well. I think you mentioned the time travel one, which I thought was great. Also really like Jason Aaron and Kano's story about the last Christmas ornament, which was upsetting and sad, but really, really well done. Just a great anthology. These EC Comics things have been really good. So excited they did a holiday one. Infinity Watch, number one from Marvel, written by Derek Landy, art by Ruairi Coleman. After the annual crossover, the Infinity Stone Bearers are all humans, and they're trying to work together as a team, but not doing a great job at it. And in fact, it leads to some deadly circumstances by the end of the issue. What'd you guys think about this?
Pete, how mad are you right now at the end of this issue?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. That ending got me a little mad for sure. But I also agree with the character. If you're going to have, you know, a team, you got to have a secret base. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just, you know, I love the logic there. And I was definitely with him, at least on that part. But, yeah, this, I like the premise of this. This is very interesting. You kind of, the gems are humans with powers. And, you know, we get Coulson here as Death, which is kind of insane. But, yeah, the reveal kind of threw me at the end.
Yeah, a couple things about this. I feel like I was a little dubious in the crossover. Like, who are these characters? It feels random that they've been assembled to be this Infinity Watch. But I think over the course of this book, it starts in a classic, like, we're a cool new super team. We have a cool new base. And then it actually gets to that point I was making of like, nah, these people are actually sort of bad at it and we're going to take advantage of it. And so I think they paid off on the sort of goofier stakes that are established here. But my second thing is like in this, so Coulson has the Death Infinity Stone. And then in this comic, he's defined as the actual Grim Reaper who has to go around and, like, collect souls or whatever. Like, is that what's happening?
I guess.
Seems like it.
That's strange. That's not accurate, is it?
No,
he has to travel the universe and just kill people?
Well, if you're going to take on, you know, if you're going to take that on, that's the job. You know, I don't know.
Why is that the job? He just has a stone.
I don't know. Death never makes sense to me anyway. Not like literal death, but the concept of death who is everywhere at the same time, but also having conversations with people.
Well, see, how it works is, you know, you live and then all living things must die at some point. So,
holy shit. Sorry. Slow down, Pete. I'm writing this down as you're saying it.
Okay.
So you're my Aristotle, Pete, so I really want to keep track of the stuff you're saying. Yeah.
All I know is these conversations and podcasts have been a great use of my scant time on Earth.
Well, let me say, if the idea here is that Agent Coulson came back to life with a stone, and now he's both a dude who wears like a medium good-looking suit and also kills everyone that dies in the entire 616 universe— I don't know if we've explored that idea, perhaps as well as we should have here.
Potentially. He is very organized. I will give him that. Action Comics 1079 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, art by Michael Shelfer and Skylar Patridge. The Phantom Zone is broken, and a bunch of Phantom Zone refugees are attacking the Earth, and the Superman family can't really stop them very effectively. And the backup story, something is happening with Supergirl, and it's very pretty to look at.
Hey.
No, I hear
it
you.
It is. The art's gorgeous.
The art is gorgeous, but there's more to it than that. You know?
Sorry,
there
real quick, is. What's the story?
Yes. Gotcha.
Oh, come on.
Come on,
man.
Aristotle. Nailed it. I believe in you.
Oh, this is bullshit, man.
Define what's happening in that story.
I can't. It's confusing. But
Supergirl's hanging out with two biker helmet people.
Right. And you're not sure.
And there may be three Supergirls?
Yeah, it could be.
That's technically a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we'll find out more. You got to tune in next time. No, this is a great issue. I also really enjoy the backup story. It's weird that they're calling them zoners. It's just such a, I don't know
I
why.
Like
that,
it.
It's
you think
kind
it's,
of weird.
You think of calzones, right? Or pozones?
Yes.
I knew it.
Yeah, they better be full of cheese around that.
That's not what a zoner is. But yeah, great art and action, and yeah.
Oh no, this comic. Wisconsin kryptonite's filling me with cheese. Help!
By help, I mean bring dipping sauce.
No, if you're next to the Wisconsin kryptonite situation, well, you don't want to be filled with cheese, right, Pete?
I don't know.
You guys want to be filled with cheese as a life goal?
And then just eat yourself to death? It's not a bad way to
go. By the way, do you know if they're still playing the Wisconsin kryptonite situation? I saw them like 7 years ago, and they killed it, but yeah, I just haven't kept track. I mean,
they had a lot of long songs, but very instrumental. They really go out.
Yeah, no, they jam. They jam bad.
And if any, please... A shout out in the comments if you know what the fuck we're talking about. But this issue, I really like this Phantom Zone story, and this feels like a completely different story. We have a sort of like slow burn, like exploration, Clark and his past and his connection to the Phantom Zone. And this feels just like a knockdown, drag out battle issue that just feels completely separate to me. Is that crazy?
Real quick though, what do you like in your zoner? Because I like a you know, pepperoni, you know what I mean, a little marinara.
I like a pure one. Dip it in the marinara. We did.
Idea that you're like, hey, I'm special. I like a pizza turned inside out as my calzone. That's the order. That's literally what it is. A weird one to be like, I want it stuffed with
chicken,
pineapple, or something.
We did miss an issue of this because it comes out weekly. We did read last week's issue, and it clearly a lot of stuff went down.
Yeah, no, I'm not knocking that part. It just feels like I just liked the earlier iteration of it more. It felt so much more grounded. This feels like a crazy battle that doesn't pay off on the really intense emotional storytelling.
So you're saying you want something different, like a Gouda in your zoner, is what you're saying. Like you really want a real different choice.
Yeah. Have you guys ever thought about what if you had a calzone, but you opened it up and laid it flat?
Like a sandwich?
But even flatter than that is what I'm talking about.
Now we're talking about flat earther stuff. I don't know.
Yes.
Pete's getting too lost.
I'm a flat calzoner.
Oh, man.
That's what I believe.
You can sail right off the edge of the calzone by wishing.
That's my belief system, yes.
Yeah.
And Pete, if you ever come to New York, which is a place that I know you've never been, I will show you some flat calzones that are blow your fucking mind.
Well, just for the record, I want to go on record as saying barbecue chicken zone is my favorite.
Oh, that is pretty good. I will say in college, and Pete knows what I'm talking about here, DP Dough, the calzone place. Great. My friend and I decided to, I don't know, trick them, and we were going to try to trick them into coming up with this idea for a calzone that was like, going to be so popular they would have to add it to the menu. So it was a onion, pesto, and pineapple calzone.
Oh,
I know. And we were like, oh, we'll
so
order
popular.
It. We'll order it from different phone numbers and give them different names each time.
I hate to break it to you, but we did that too.
Yeah. But here's
not
the thing.
Not a gross
is,
order. We made a
I
good
ordered
calzone.
It enough times that I started to like it and just order it for myself.
There you go. Wow, you pranked yourself somehow.
I got myself.
Let me ask you guys this. Clearly, you're on board with the idea of a calzone place. Any place that focuses on calzones above pizza is a disaster.
No, DP Dough is good. DP Dough is good.
Dude, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. All right? DP Dough started, it's this beautiful relationship between a mother and a son. Whose father ran
the
pizza shop.
I don't need
the
backstory.
They got
the
bored and they started
the dough,
making cards.
The son is the cheese.
Oh, my God. It's a beautiful story, this origin story of DP Dough.
Yeah. The son fell in a vat of hat cheese, and they were like, we shall preserve.
Hey, man, food is food. Don't like it. You can't be like, oh, whatever. If it's not pizza, I don't fucking want to deal with it. Fuck you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm not saying fuck you. I'm just saying a calzone is a pizza you order when you're wasted. And that's the only thing.
Oh, how dare
that's,
you.
No,
who
Pete, orders, he's right
who is on a Who is on a quiet
Name one time you ordered DP Dough when you were sober.
Who's having a chill night, a chill Saturday in, and you're like, I would love to eat an entire calzone by myself. No.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You got to be high AF. to be like, let's get the let's order two calzones.
From High AF to FML number two, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by David Lopez. This book takes place in a not too different from our world's world, where everything is going horribly wrong. We, in the first issue, followed a bunch of kids who sort of cast like a magic spell that turned one of them into a large hairy beast. This issue turns the lens to his mom, who is just trying to hold it together, even though everything is falling apart around her. Man, I love this book. Love David Lopez's art. Love the whole tone of it, where Kelly Sue is dealing with some really serious stuff like school shootings, but doing it in the right satirical way, where she's making it enjoyable, but also making it nerve-wracking at the same time. And the back matter on this book is bar none the best of the business. So
that's what I was going to say. The back matter is so good. It's a great package, something I like to say a lot. But what I want to highlight here is, yes, the art and the writing that is just taking reality and heightening it above what we all normally experience, which is great in the comic book world because it's very fun. It takes these harder to talk about themes and lets them become accessible to us, and artistically lets the art really shine.
Yeah, as the person who mentioned this as one of my favorites, this is just such a great idea, so well executed. Art is unbelievable, creates such a realistic but also kind of magical world that pulls you in so perfectly. I really love this comic. It is just glorious. And it's also nice that you get to see, you know, a lot of us saw on the news the Dorico kind of flying off the plane, and now you know what happened to it. So full circle moment here. This is glorious.
I'll also mention, particularly with this issue, as a parent, I felt a lot of this in terms of the, like, just got to keep going. Got to get the trains running on time. Get the lunches together. Here we go. Everything's falling apart. It's cool. Let's go. Let's go. And that level of stress really came through in the book, but in a very fun, smart way. This is great. Pet Pool, Pool Party number one from Marvel, written by Mackenzie Cadenhead, art by Eden Balam. This is a collection of the Marvel Infinity comic that rolled out vertically online and focusing on a bunch of pet versions of Deadpool. Gotta tell you what, I was not expecting how violent this would be.
What? Yeah. Come on, man. It's a Deadpool book.
And let me just take a second and just see how far down the pipe we are here on the Deadpool experience. Mm-hmm. A character created in the late 90s by Rob Liefeld to be a almost throwaway assassin.
And Fabian Disweza.
Yeah, and Fabian Disweza, sorry, of course. Just how far we've come, that the title of this book is Pet Pool, Pool Party, featuring Deadpool and his pets, laying down in the snow, and one of the O's in pool is a peppermint. Like, this is, from the cover, crazy nonsense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I'm just trying to say, put a flag in where we are.
This is just fun, hilarious. I love the start, spoilers, but they start with the old McDonald, famous song there, and they really kind of did such a great job executing that in a fun way. This is just clever, well executed. Yeah, really fun art, fun stories. One question I do have. Did Jordan D. White shave his famous mustache? Because the version of Jordan D. White in this book is, I don't know if it's more historically accurate or not. I mean, maybe I've lost touch with the current shavings of Jordan D. White, but
I do not know what you're referring to. I will say my son was interested in checking this out and wanted to know if it was appropriate, so maybe that was more top of mind. But when the second or third page features a eyeball and then Mousepool is chewing graphically through somebody's leg, I was like, I'm sorry, this is not for you. So any parents out there who see this, they're like, oh, I can give my kid a cute little book. Do not do that.
No, yeah, you should know better.
But let me shout out a couple things I thought were funny. The idea of Dogpool taking one of Deadpool's actual severed limbs and burying it as his bone, I thought was really fun.
Yeah.
And then the bar, the
talking dog bit was great. Yeah.
Very fun. Yeah. Very fun.
Batman and Robin, number 16 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Miguel Mendoza. Here we have a new old threat is hitting Gotham City. This is a villain that Batman does not believe is real, but in fact it may be and may be coming back for Gotham City in a new way. What'd you guys think about this?
Well, first off, great cover. Really setting a nice tone here. This is a fantastic issue. The story is really getting good with the fun twists and turns. I feel like this really took a next level jump and amping up to kind of get to some fun kind of character reveals. I like where this is putting Batman and Robin. I think it's very interesting. And I'm all in. Get it?
I really like the art, sort of not always what you'd expect for a sort of over-the-plate Batman story. This reminds me a lot of stories from, like, the Detective Comics book they were doing in, like, late 90s, early aughts, where it was, like, sort of more out of continuity Batman stories, just, like, getting into something weird and a little bit different. So that's very cool. I like Batman stories that edge on supernatural, but I think inevitably pull it back to a very real thing that is happening here. And shouts to this new FBI character that feels like maybe will be someone that continues on in this book.
Yeah. Mm. Minor Arcana, number 4 from Boob Studios by Jeff Lemire. After the first arc found our character returning home and starting to accept the fact that she is connected to something through supernatural through tarot cards, here she decides to explore that a little further. And I'll tell you what, I think this series gets better and better every issue.
Yes, agreed, dude. Yeah, reading this, I was like, this is getting good. I love the art, love the story. Fun last page reveal. She's starting to understand her powers, and I can't wait to read more.
Same. I feel like we talked a lot in the first and second issue about how our main character is sort of mean and not nice to everyone around her. And there's a lot of softening happening here as she's realizing that some of this stuff is more real than she thinks. And this story and this issue just takes on sort of a fun little follow into like local kids television, which I thought was fun. Something that used to be much more of a thing in the 20th century, where every like local TV affiliate would have a kids show that they produced in the small town or in the larger town that they would, where there's their broadcast center. And so it was all super weird. Very fun.
Calavera PI number 2 from Odie Press by Marco Finnegan. This is following a skeleton detective who has come back on the Day of the Dead. And our big criticism, if I recall, of the first issue was if you give us a skeleton detective on the cover, you got to give us more than him just showing up in the final few pages. This issue is wall-to-wall skeleton detective, baby. So, Pete, you seem pretty stoked.
Yeah, I love the story. I love the twists and turns. Skeleton detective trying to figure it out. I mean, spoilers, but that clown driver seemed pretty creepy as fuck. But yeah, this is very creative and interesting, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens here or what hobbies.
You ever bump into a clown?
No.
Just an everyday clown going somewhere?
I'd set myself on fire if I touched a clown.
I bumped into a clown so hard I married it. Pennywise. Pennywise.
It was a clown reference. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. We all know Alex is married to Pennywise.
You found your wife in the sewers, right? You're walking by. And
Pennywise,
like,
hey, the dancing wife, I call her.
Yeah. You all float down there, is what they say.
That
you
was
said
her vows, you remembered.
That's beautiful. Really beautiful stuff.
I hope you don't get murdered later.
No, I don't think. Pennywise
is murder.
So.
I can't imagine.
People. Yeah, I can't imagine. Alex loves a real sharp tooth smile, always has. This book is great. I feel like the art, it really carries it. It has like such a pulpy feel. The pages look very aged, which I think is really working for it. And I love the deep dive into sort of a noir detective story and the tropes that come with that. But getting into the deeper cultural ideas behind Day of the Dead there is very fun as well. Really enjoyed this.
Alien Paradiso, number one from Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Edgar Salazar. This is taking the Alien franchise to a outer space resort.
Oh.
And I'll tell you what, not a great place to throw in a xenomorph. I felt like this delivered on exactly what I wanted for the premise, but it is weird seeing an alien thing in the sunshine and the outside and in the setting, but that's kind of the point.
You wanted like a slow motion shot of the alien coming out of the water, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like whipping its head back.
Yeah. Like in a slinky little bikini.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Like a splash situation.
Oh boy. Yeah. This was intense and gross, but exactly like Alex said, exactly what you wanted from kind of the setup here. But man, it's, it was kind of a fun bit and spoilers, but you know, you have people going scanning, looking for like weapons, but it's like, dude, you should have been scanning for other life forms inside of people. But yeah, this is, I love the pace of this. It's very fast paced. A lot of shit goes down in this issue. So yeah, super happy with this.
I got pulled out of TSA just the other day and they squeezed my torso until a xenomorph came out.
Smart.
They were like, you can't travel with that.
You can't travel with
you
that.
You can't travel with that.
You know, and they used to never do that. You can go right up to the gate with a xenomorph and nobody would stop you.
The xenomorph jump out of your body, right? And then they immediately want to fly the plane. And, you know, they don't have the hours for that. So mm-hmm. It's just not a good look.
Yeah. Famous pilot xenomorphs.
Yep.
This is such a great way of taking the Alien movie franchise and being like, here's a movie they won't do, Aliens on Vacation. And you get that here. So that is nice. And this hits all the marks you would expect from that. Yes, exactly.
Batman, Santa Claus, Silent Night Returns, number three from DC Comics, written by Jeff Parker, art by Lucas Kettner and Michelle Bandini. In this issue, our Santa Claus and friends are continuing to fight back against the Silent Night, and they find out some interesting information by the end here. This continues to be fun.
Yeah, I agree.
You love this.
Yeah, this continues to be absolutely badass. Santa is badass in this. I love the art, love all the action, love the fun twists and turns. Then people getting excited about seeing Santa, this is great.
Do you believe in Jack's Santa? Are you a swole Santa guy now, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, hey, man, Santa can be whatever he wants, you know what I mean?
How many times have you seen Red One so far?
Is it... it's only out in theaters, right?
Yeah.
So none yet.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Okay. Waiting for it to come streaming, you know what I mean?
Alex, as someone who doesn't celebrate Christmas, does this make you want to get down with a swole Santa?
I think so. I already set up a tree upstairs just in case Silent Night can come by, or Batman, or Santa Claus, I guess, is a third option.
Wow.
Wow.
Maybe Jeff Parker could come down my chimney for Christmas.
Man, what a great Christmas list you just established there of, like, the people you want to see at your house. Started with Silent Night, the murderer. Just to be clear.
I'm writing a book about that, actually, the four people you see at Christmas.
Oh, that's really smart. Man, great formula to cash in on. I mean, this is fine. It's crazy. Really establishing a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
Interesting. Transformers number 15 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Jorge Corona. In this issue, the Transformers continue to do Transformers things as Optimus is having some sort of PTSD flashbacks. There's a new faction of Transformers that enter the fray beyond the Autobots and Decepticons. And the Decepticons are just absolutely wrecking Tacoma, I want to say. Like, Tacoma's gone at this point.
Yeah, man. A city we all love to visit.
Yeah, it's too bad.
What do you think, Pete? You're our Transformers correspondent.
Transformers. Yeah, this is Shinsuke crazy. And, you know, it's sad because we're seeing Autobots, like, walk away and be like, yo, Optimus, I can't do this anymore. I made a vow. I'm not fighting. I'm out. Meanwhile, the Decepticons are just regrouping and whooping ass here. So it's not looking good for the Autobots, but great art and action. I love this. I mean, every time I read this, I can hear Optimus's voice. So I'm having a blast with this.
Nice. You're haunted by a robot. Yeah. The thing with this is it feels like we've been in the middle for a long time with this. And like, I'm not trying to be negative about it, but it just feels like there's so many things that are happening that aren't like beginning or ending. And we get a reveal at the end of Bruticus. Pete, does that mean something?
Oh, yeah, man.
What does it mean, Pete?
Well, Bruticus has, you know, talked about it. It's like Transformers went through this thing where it's like every side kind of had to have their super, where like you put a bunch of robots
like
together.
Like a Voltron.
Like a Voltron situation. Yeah.
And sorry, this was a story reason, not so you had to buy five toys, right? It was a story reason.
I mean, these started out as toys, bro.
Really?
So, yeah, you got to be like, you know.
I agree with you, Justin, but I will say on the more positive, it was nice to have Jorge Corona back on art because I think only second to Daniel Warren Johnson, he just does a better job with the Transformers. Like this sounds like a crazy thing to say, but there's a softness to the designs there that when they get too blocky, it's just... I don't know. It looks like a bunch of blocks to me, and I can't tell anybody apart. There's much more character in the Transformers in this issue.
In their faces specifically, which we see a lot of. And you see them getting wrecked more, and you definitely feel like everyone's banged up in this series right now.
Yeah. Very curious to find out what happened with the plot line where Optimus ate Sam's dad, which we start to pay off in this issue. So that should be cool.
Daniel Warren Johnson has really tapped into something here. He's writing the crap out of this, and it's really bringing my childhood back to life in such a great way. So it's very exciting.
Interesting.
Were you smashed to your Transformers?
Okay. Always be smashing.
That was the original draft of Glengarry Glen Ross. Skin Police, number 3 from Oni Press, written by Jordan Thomas, art by Daniel Jeté. This follows a world where people create dupes, clones out of pieces of skin, and the Skin Police, the police force who has to track them down. We spent a lot of this issue exploring the opposite side, the team who is fighting back against this world. What'd you guys think about this one?
I love Skin Police. I think this is so creative and so cool. This continues to be just great. This gets more intense. I love the art, love the action. Can't wait to read more. This is just such a cool, interesting future. I just can't say enough about it.
Can't wait to meet my dupe. This reminds me of Blade Runner meets Starship Troopers, where it's like a lot of violence, face ripping off by the end of the this issue. But what's that?
Do you want to learn more?
Yes. And
do you want to know more?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay. Yes, I agree. I am really enjoying this as well. Great art, great character designs, very satirical, very fun. Just to throw out a theory at you guys, I think they're tipping their hand a little bit at this issue anyway. But I'm pretty sure the leader of the resistance is a clone of the main cop we're following, or we're going to find out the cop is a clone of this guy, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Kaboom. I don't know, man.
Regardless, having a great time with this. Let's talk about what I would consider one of the bigger issues of the week. Storm, number three from Marvel, written by Murawe Ayodele, art by Lucas Wernick. In the first two issues, Storm was irradiated and got cancer that was going to kill her in about a week. She met up with Dr. Voodoo, who sort of cures her this issue by casting a spell where she can't use her powers for 7 days. She goes down to Louisiana to visit the uncanny X-Men, and some stuff goes down there, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's crazy to be like, Dr. Voodoo's like, hey, I'm sorry, you can't use your powers for 7 days. And Storm's like, all right, I'm going to go fuck Wolverine.
Well, come on.
And that's what she does.
No, come on, dude. First, she's like, yo, let me go visit my friends. And there's a hilarious panel of, like, she's trying to do a group hug, and, like, Wolverine's trying to walk away, and she, like, grabs him by the back of the collar. And just, oh, just such a funny image. But then they go into fight training, which is very serious. And then lends its way to more serious action. But what's heartbreaking is Storm doesn't feel good about it the next day.
No, she doesn't not feel good about it. Just a giant penguin.
She's like, she says, I don't feel good about it. And Rogue's like, yo, I can't believe you fucked Wolverine. And she's like, shut up, I don't feel good about it. And then...
No. I think she's sort of like, she's like, oh, this is, this isn't like out of nowhere. I think there's a
this
little
has
bit
been
of
building for decades. Like, not just there was, you know, on screen in the movies, in the comics. I thought this was great. I thought this was a great surprising moment that I did not see coming. Yes. I love the way Lucas Wernick draws Wolverine's expression when it's happening, where he's like, what? What's happening? Is this happening? Does somebody actually get through my stink and love me? Yes. It's great stuff. I mean, I'm into it.
I am also into it. I love this issue. I thought it was great. It feels like this comic, as a standalone in the X-Men relaunch, is doing way more interesting stuff than a lot of the other ones, pushing the borders. I want this to resonate throughout the rest of the comics. The idea that Storm and Wolverine would, like, hook up and no one else would talk about it is insane. This should run shockwaves through the entire X-Men line. Mm-hmm. So let's see that happen. And let's not even forget that Storm goes to meet with Dr. Doom, sort of shattering a lot of the crazy larger continuity in the Marvel Universe. So this book is moving.
Well, and she goes riding on, like, a giant bird, which was very funny and fun. Yes. The whole conversation with the bird was like, you want to ride me, right? That's what you want to do?
No. He's like,
I don't want to do it. My powers right now.
Great stuff. Great book. Definitely pick it up. DC versus Vampires, World War V, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg and Matthew K. Manning, art by Otto Schmidt and Aki Bright. Front story, lots of stuff going down in the vampire infused DC universe as various factions vie for control, specifically of Mr. Miracle and Barda's baby. Meanwhile, in the backup story, we get a very sad story about Black Lightning. What'd you guys think?
Yeah. Well, this is a blast. I love the kind of World War V thing that DC is doing here. They did such a great job with it, so I'm glad it's still going on. But yeah, this was a crazy-ish. Loved all the art and action. Fun twists and turns. But man, my guy, John Constantine, fucking Gorilla Grodd fucks your shit up. So not happy about that. But other than that, this was a artistic just achievement.
This story, like, I think I was saying in the previous issues of this, that it's, I really like this world, but it's very chaotic. This is really starting to come into focus here, and like, we're organizing around Big Barda and Mr. Miracle's baby, which I think is really smart. There's just a great sequence here with them and their fight slash emotional exchange.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, really good. And just like I think I mentioned last month when Black Lightning number 1 came out, of the two stories, like, I think this story is excellent with Black mm-hmm. Lightning. I think the main title is very fun, but this artistically and just as a moment with the character, I enjoy this backup more than the main title that's happening here. And the shit that's happening with Wally West in this is just so upsetting.
So
deeply bad. Disturbing, yeah. But very well done.
Witchblade number 6 from Image Comics, written by Marguerite Bennett, art by Giuseppe Caffaro. In this issue, Sarah Pazzini is finally accepting the power of the Witchblade, thanks to a secret from her father's past, I believe, that she discovers that ties into, as we speculated in the last issue, the arrival of the darkness in the rebooted Top Cow universe. And as I said last time, I cannot explain it. I'm a total sucker for this.
Wait, you love this?
I do. I like the Witchblade stuff, but there's something about the darkness that I cannot explain that I really like that character. So every time early in the issue, somebody's like, a darkness is coming. And I'm like, ooh, I wonder if they're hinting at the darkness. And then they were like, you're supposed to fight the darkness. And I was like, they are hinting at the darkness. And then I turned to the last page and they're like, next issue, the darkness arrives. And I was like, let's go.
Isn't the darkness just a juicier Venom?
No, man. He's like a male Witchblade with demons who hang out.
Yeah, little demons that hang out.
But it's
like
just
minions.
Goopy. No, it's
very specific goop. It's like he sends out ghosts almost.
Yeah, like the little...
He shoots ghosts. Okay. He's like a male Witchblade who shoots ghosts. Comics are great.
Wow, it's really funny because when I heard you kind of talking to Alex, I just heard this like... guy in the basement where someone's asked for a blade and they were like, which blade are you talking about? Which blade would you like me to hand you? Anyways.
That's what she's choosing.
I'm going to mute your audio now, I think.
Okay, cool. That seems fair.
Just for a while. It's like going to a penalty box.
Just while you think about
hockey.
What just happened here.
Yeah, you have to think about what you just done. 2 minutes. Two minutes.
I'm also a sucker for Witchblade. I feel like this is fun. I've seen it all before, but I'm still enjoying it for some reason.
Wow. What a review. I also like the Witchblade. I like the part I like, less so the darkness, which I don't really understand, but the way that we're building out a little bit more of a mystery with why she has the Witchblade. The secret door stuff is fun and more magical than I would expect.
Yeah. The Terminator, number 3 from Dynamite, written by Declan Shalvey and Sal Crivelli, art by David O'Sullivan and Colin Craker. In the front story, we're finishing the two-parter set in Vietnam with the Terminator going back there. And the backup story continues 2 pages at a time, the fight that is happening with another Terminator. I thought this Vietnam arc was great, just really ended very emotionally and darkly. But I don't know, Declan Shalvey is just really doing an effective job of using the Terminator as a outside source of pressure on stories already in progress. And I'm really appreciating it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Vietnam is fucked up to begin with in this, you know, it's already a hectic situation. You throw a Terminator in there. I mean, that really raised the stakes. And as we see in this issue, the Terminator is hard to kill, man. He just, you know, keeps coming back for more. Yeah.
Controversial statements, Pete. Vietnam, hectic situation, and Terminator hard to kill.
Yeah.
I've never heard either of these things
before. Yeah, just throwing some real heat.
You should be a newscaster in like the early 70s. Late
60s. Sweet, man. I appreciate it. I just thought this was... artistically impressive and a fun combination. If you would have said to me, you know, it'd be sick because Terminator Vietnam, I'd been like, what? But this is actually pulling that off really well. And it's like Alex said, it's moving, it's powerful, it's pretty cool.
Love the Apocalypse Now references in the title of this issue. In the previous issue was the Apocalypse Then. That's a really nice sort of table setting for a story that feels like, I mean, if you're like a Garth Ennis fan, this feels like in line with something you might like, just shifting from Punisher to Terminator. Also someone that just shoots people. So that's cool. But really enjoyed this. If we can keep moving into different eras with Terminators appearing. I think that's this is a great move for this series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, though, I do feel like the guy should have picked up on the Terminator when he did that, repeated the line back to him. But other than that,
he do you think you could spot a Terminator?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 100%?
Yeah. No questions asked.
Are you saying, sure? Though, yeah, like, are you saying you're the target, or are you just like a casual, like, is Terminator coming to kill you? You're like the John Connor?
I'm just saying, if I'm somewhere and there's a Terminator around, I'm going to spot him.
I don't want to call you out here, Pete, but we went to the supermarket the other day, and I saw him arguing with that robot that goes around cleaning the floors for like 10 minutes.
I was just suspicious.
Stop following me. You're a Terminator, he says. Yeah. Pete smashed so googly many Roombas.
I was like, I'm not falling for it, bro.
Amazing Spider-Man, number 63 from Marvel, written by Justina Ireland, art by Gleb Melnikov. This is continuing the Eight Deaths of Spider-Man arc, but from a new creative team, picking up from Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness, I believe.
I think they're alternating, though, because I was surprised by this. This is not a unplanned.
No. It's not unplanned. I believe Joe Kelly and Justina Ireland sort of etched out the whole story arc and are going back and forth, because apparently Joe Kelly is working on something else, which may be more Amazing Spider-Man, maybe not. We're not sure. But I thought this was the best issue so far. Nothing against the previous team, but it's a great story of Spider-Man fighting this mystical being who takes him through all the worst moments in his life and how he fights back about that against that. I thought it was cleverly done. I thought it was emotional. Really like this issue a lot.
Same. Smartly done. We're getting a little bit more about Shay, everyone's favorite.
Oh, I was going to ask about that. We did learn so many things about her this issue. Justin, like, she's okay with cheap wine. She goes on a picnic sometimes.
Famously dangerous thing to do in the Marvel Universe.
So that's two things. Those are characteristics of a human being.
100%.
I'm glad you guys are having fun. And
The more interesting relationship for Peter Parker is occurs in this issue, the Black Cat. Great scene here.
Please stay on Shay for 1 second, just because we discovered something in our Patreon Slack this week. We were talking about her as the mean lawyer that he was dating for a little while. She's not. She is a nurse from Ravencroft, who he met as they broke up, as he broke up with the mean lawyer. So she is such a distinct character, we mixed her up with another character.
Yeah, that's true. But we were learning more. I also think it's very strange that she's like, yeah, I work at a known murder asylum. Yeah. I work at the Arkham Asylum of the Marvel Universe. And that's a strange thing for her to be flexing.
I did like the tease with the X-Men at the end. I thought that was pretty cool.
Do you think there's maybe like a little too much with the X-Men? I know that's a crazy thing for me to say, but
are
I definitely
you
felt that
over-axed right now.
In this stack in particular, I was like, there's a lot of X-Men cameos going on here.
Well, let me throw this out. This isn't an X-Men cameo. This is a Juggernaut cameo, and this whole arc is all about the Sidorak. That's literally Juggernaut is that. It's the only thing we know about that. So it makes total sense. I love the way they slow played us into it.
Yeah. Green Lantern, number 18 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Zermanico. This is the end of the arc of the Green Lantern Corps fighting against Tharos, I want to say, is the name of the character. Whatever it is, they wrap that up and kick off the next thing, which is going to be called Fractured Lantern. Now, Justin, I know, like myself, you felt this was getting a little complicated in the last issue. How did you feel about this wrap-up here?
I thought it wrapped up, like, unnecessarily quickly. It felt like a quick, they've established Tharos here as a big villain. And then he sort of just, like, loses quickly at the end, out of nowhere. So I thought this was sort of a strange wrap-up. I do like the idea that the Spectrum has been shattered and we're going to get to open up what a Green Lantern can be and what all the different Spectrum Lanterns can be going forward. And this Star Sapphire stuff with Carol is also interesting. So there's still elements here that I really like. It was just strange to me how easily dispatched Tharos was.
The issue I had with this was that it takes the eye off of Hal Jordan, which we've been doing for 17 plus issues so far.
Yeah.
I don't mind it necessarily because there's a great Kilowog moment that happens in this issue. There's a killer Kyle Rayner moment in the issue as well. So very fun stuff throughout. But the emotional core of the series, the thing that's been working, is the razor focus on Hal Jordan. And he's just kind of in this issue. He is not the central character.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to The Fade, number two for Boom Box, written by Abria Iyengar, art by Murray Costa. We were, I think, mixed positive on the first issue of this. It takes place in a world where people can go to a mystical fantasy world called The Fade. I will throw out that I think I am still mixed positive on the side of confused in the second issue. I'm not 100% sure what's going on here, but I do like the art, and I want to like this.
Same. I know, Pete, maybe you have a different take, but I will agree with Alex. I'm still a little confused about what's happening, but I do like the characters, and I like sort of what the world seems to be, but they just don't seem to be showing it to us.
Yeah, I'm having a great time here. I feel like this is a very enjoyable ish. I love the art style. It has kind of like a cartoon like feel to it, which brings a lightness to it, which is enjoyable. You know, dealing with finding his powers and finding his path. This is all good stuff. I cannot wait to see what happens next. I am all in on The Fade.
Wow,
you're a Fade fan. That wasn't good. I don't know. I thought there'd be an alliteration there, but there wasn't really.
I mean, there was.
I mean, there was, but it wasn't a good one. Uncanny yes. X-Men, number 7 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by David Marquez and Edgar Salazar. This is the second part of the Radon Gray Malkin crossover, and we're jumping back in time to see how the Louisiana X-Men ended up at the Westchester Mansion, and then getting a little bit ahead with some new mysteries and some new battles to fight. I think we all really liked the first issue of this. How did we feel about the second one?
Well, I thought it was fun the way it started with, Scott and Rogue fighting. And it was like, hey, Scott, can you stop being a dick for 1 second and listen to what Rogue is actually saying to you? Nope. And then I was rooting for her to really fuck up Scott, but she didn't, which I was a little disappointed by. But she had him there by the neck, so there was some hope.
So I wrote both of those takes down from you 5 hours ago, and you nailed both of them, Pete.
Okay, great. I'm glad I'm consistent. Yeah, but I hate to see the inner team fighting, but I'm looking forward to what's happening next. Interesting last panel. And if Blob asked me that same choice, I would just leave.
What was the choice?
The Blob says you can either leave or you can stay forever.
I don't know. Where is he inviting me to?
Well, if you read the comic, the last panel looks like a fucked up future where people are not quite themselves, so I would just leave.
I don't know. I mean, that sounds like a little bit of a break.
I think they mean Gray Malkin. I think they mean the X-Mansion.
Oh, yeah.
I like this crossover. I think these characters, the idea that this Gray Malkin place is turning mutants into these automatons is good and scary. This book also is able to have some fun here.
Yeah, the Juggernaut stuff was hilarious.
The Juggernaut stuff is very fun, which I was like, the line is on one page where he's like, I'm going to, let me find it. He says, yeah, this time the hair is going to kick the turtle's ass. Yeah. And I was like, oh, what a weird way to say it. And then Edie's like, wait, is Juggernaut the hair in this metaphor? And I was like, exactly. So yeah. Just a perfect setup punchline, I thought.
The Toxic Avenger, number 3 from Ahoy Comics, written by Matt Boers, art by Fred Harper. In this issue, Toxie is trying to rally the town against the corporation that has shut them down. Things go predictably wrong. I continue to really enjoy the satirical bent of this book. It's smart, it's funny, and the designs from Fred Harper are gross.
Yeah, but I also think that they're... For me, Toxic Avenger has been tough because they focus a lot of the times on the grossness of the Toxic Avenger, obviously. But sometimes it's too gross or it's hard for me to root for them a little bit, which might be, problematic on my part. But this one, he was gross in a way that was almost like a fun mirror where his head was kind of almost twisted. And so I wasn't as kind of grossed out. So I felt more kind of in tune with the Toxic Avenger. So I had a great time with this issue. And I'm looking forward to more.
What a journey you took us on about your grossness.
But also I liked the beats and spoilers, but the starting with the kind of bully and then finishing with the bully was really fun journey they took us on.
Agreed. Like this, we're about to talk about the writer Mark Russell in the next issue we're discussing, but this reminds me of a lot of his work, what's happening here, where we're getting some satire, we're getting some like fun action and some nice setup throughout the issue.
And as teased by Justin, X-Factor number 5 from Marvel, written by Mark Russell, art by Bob Quinn. In this issue, the team is going on another mission. Will they survive? Not everybody, per the cover. Some of them are becoming Skull Boys.
Yeah, I agree, Alex.
You agree they're becoming Skull Boys?
Yeah,
I refer to death as well.
I've written down the Badass Skull Crew cover, and I was hoping, oh man, they're all going to turn into Badass Skull Crew, but not the case. So very misleading cover, which really threw me.
Yeah.
It's messed up. I like the McCloud part. I thought that was fun, and I like the glazed ham joke, but when they just kicked that dude out the plane, that was fucked up.
I like this book is playing fast and loose with its characters. It feels like you never know what's going to happen in this, as opposed to a lot of comics, specifically X-Men comics. So good read, good fun, but also good action.
There you go. And a good place to end the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Sure to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Club on Blue Sky, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast, many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
I look forward to the day that Phil Coulson comes and makes me into an official Skull Boy.
Ooh.
Kills me. Death.
No, we got that. Yeah, we got that part.
You just gotta
Phil Coulson, death.
Yeah, got to rub some rock salt on you. That'll happen.
Yeah, go rub rock salt, guys. Later.
This holiday, wrap affection with a gift that everyone loves, gift cards. Giftcards.com makes it easy to make the thought and the gift count with over 350 brands to choose from. Gift from top brands like Sephora, Nordstrom, DoorDash, and more. New this year is the Giftcards.com gift card, which gives your giftee access to choose from almost anything at Giftcards.com with no purchase fees, no expiration, and instant delivery. It's the gift of so many possibilities. Visit giftcards.com today. See giftcards.com for terms and conditions.
The holidays are happening at Diamonds Direct. Still rushing to finish your holiday shopping? Don't worry, we've got you covered. Now through Sunday, it's our last chance sale with 20% off virtually everything. Earrings, bracelets, pendants, and more. Plus special financing options up to 5 years. But don't wait. This is your final opportunity to find the perfect gift at the best value before the holidays. Plus special designer appearances. Visit us during extended holiday hours or shop online and pick up in store. Our 20% off last chance sale ends Sunday. Learn more at DiamondsDirect.com.